Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts?
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who.
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not.
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcasts. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
Right now, thank you for tuning in to the GSMC MMA podcast. I'm your host, Tate, and today we are going to be talking about that Bellator 206 card, which actually ended up being a lot better than I thought. Today, joining me, we have her. Make sure I get this right, because I have been calling you the wrong name numerous times, even though you're my man. Hermilo. See, people, I keep having a problem. Hermilo Garcia, who is our newest member to the GSMC MMA team. And Hermilo comes with a boxing background. So he's been boxing and a boxing fan, and has been breaking down boxing for how long?
I say about the last 8 years.
So for the last 8 years, almost a decade, not quite as long as I have been. I've been a boxing fan and boxed and everything, but that's been, makes me really old. That's as far as boxing goes, almost 30 years ago is when I started boxing. And then I've been doing MMA for about 20 years. So we both have a combat background, but welcome to the show, and you're going to be part of the MMA team and breaking down a lot of shows, so everyone's going to get to know you a little bit better. We're going to dive right into that Bellator 206 card. First off, what did you think of that card? Were you excited to watch it?
Super excited. Now, I wasn't as familiar as you when it comes to these guys.
Okay.
I was trying to get us sort of acquainted and get to know, okay, who's this guy? Let me look a little bit about his background. But overall, especially with the Jackson Silva, you know, given these legends, I was like, okay, let's watch these guys. They're a little bit past their prime, but I'm excited to see these legends go at it, and of course, see some up-and-coming fighters that I might not know about.
You know, and that's exactly, you said it perfect. This exactly what the card was made of. You had some guys that were some really solid up-and-coming guys, like Aaron Pico. Super excited to see Aaron Pico and as he continues on to just set the world on fire as he starts his Bellator career. But then you also had the old grizzle vets, Vanderlei Silva and Quentin Jackson, and then you had the cream of the crop, two of the best fighters in the world to cap off this card with Gegard Mousasi and Roy McDonald.
Roy.
I keep saying Roy. It's Roy, but I you get where I'm coming from. Said it wrong there. But these guys, this card did not disappoint. Most Bellator cards I watch a Bellator card and I get a little disappointed. But this card didn't disappoint. And we're going to roll right into talking about that main event. When I started watching this fight, within the first 30 seconds of this fight, because Gegard Mousasi won with a second round stoppage, I looked at this fight and I'm like, Roy had made a mistake by taking this fight. This was a bad decision. Within the first 30 seconds, I saw how big Gegard Mousasi was. Gegard was just Roy, who has always been the bigger welterweight. When I look at him and I think about him when he fought Wonder Boy, when he fought Tyron Woodley, when he fought Robbie Lawler, I always looked at him as a tall, tall, slender, you know, bigger fighter. But when you see him against Gegard just towered over him. He was taller. He was wider. He was just better. And like I said, within the first 30 seconds, I looked at this and I said, this is a mistake. This is a mismatch. What did you say when you first saw this?
One of the first things, I was actually watching the fight with my roommate and I told him, look at that difference in size.
That's what I noticed. Monstrous difference.
You can tell right away. And, of course, Gegard's jab. That's, as a boxing fan, that's the first thing. That's a boxing jab.
It was truly a boxing jab. It was a beautiful thing. I've always said that more MMA fighters should operate behind a few things. The first thing is, with boxers, tall, lanky fighters should always use a solid, stiff jab. And you don't see that a lot. Gegard had a solid, solid jab. It was fast. It was hard, stiff. It established him where Rory had no shot at getting close to him, and he never let him get comfortable because that jab was so stiff. When you started seeing Gegard work behind the jab, what were you seeing?
One of the first things is the fact that the jab was doing what it was supposed to do, snap a guy's head back and keep him thinking twice about just coming in. And that's exactly what was happening.
Rory was not prepared for it.
It wasn't. He wasn't. He was staying on the outside. He wasn't able to figure out, in my opinion, how to come in, how to try to, you know, get into that guard.
And I have seen both of these guys fight a lot. I didn't see that coming either. I did not see a stiff jab like that. I mean, Gegard used his size to walk Rory down. I felt like Rory could never figure out how to engage where he could start getting his wrestling involved. Because one of the best ways, if you have a guy that's way bigger than you, the most important thing to do to balance out that strength and that size is to take him to the ground. But when you have a jab that keeps a guy at bay, he had no shot of taking him down.
I agree. No shot. I was watching him. I was trying to figure out, okay, maybe he's going to try to feint him. Use a couple feints. That's also what you can do when you're fighting a bigger guy. Use some feints and try to get on the inside. He tried a couple times, but, I mean, that jab just kept him at bay. I mean, that jab was just so stiff, but very accurate. That's what I noticed. It was fast, accurate.
Yes, it was. And it was just snapping his head back. You've boxed. When you come in and you get your head snapped back a two or three times, it makes you think twice before you start coming in. Especially it makes you abandon the whole concept of being aggressive as well.
Oh yeah, especially when they catch you coming in.
Yes, and it was catching them clean. So then when you roll into the second round, and it was just more of the same. I feel like Rory had no clue on how to figure this out. To me, when the second round started, it was already over.
Yeah.
Just a foregone conclusion, right? Then when it went to the ground, and I thought this is where his wrestling game would kind of come into play. Gegard was just too big, too long, too lanky. And then when Gegard stepped over to go in the side guard, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be bad. When you have a fighter that's that big, that long, and that lanky, it gives you an opportunity to be able to hold a guy down, but raise up and bring that elbow down. And that's exactly what happened. It busted him up. And it was just a matter of time before this fight was going to be stopped. The damage was just too much. What else? What were you going to say on that?
I was just going to say, yeah. So Gegard got the mount. And then after that, I was like, okay, we'll see. Maybe he'll do some jiu-jitsu.
Try to, yes. you know,
flip him around.
And he tried a couple times,
yes. But it was pretty fruitless. I mean, like you said, when you have a bigger guy on top of you like that.
It was just too much. It was just way too much. At no point did I thought Rory's ground game was ever a threat. Matter of fact, I hate to say this, but through the whole fight, from the minute the bell sounded to the end, it was never a threat.
No, it was never. I mean, I just thought, oh, this is just a great boxing match. Let's say that. All stand up.
Now, looking at this and Gegard won, and the first thing made me think is Gegard possibly the best middleweight in the world? And I have to say, he has a claim to that. Traditionally, when you think about MMA and you say, who are the best fighters in the world, you never think about Bellator fighters. And I know some people have brought up in the past, they've brought up, let's say, they brought Rory because he's the last person that stopped or beat Tyron Woodley. But I never really looked at him as truly one of the best welterweight in the world. I just didn't think of it that way. But when I look at Gegard, before he left the UFC, he was already arguably a title contender and possibly the best middleweight in the world. And then seeing how he totally dispatched Roy McDonald, do you say he has a legitimate claim at being considered one of the best in the world?
I don't think so. But my question to you, actually, should he stay at middleweight?
Oh, you're talking about Gegard, or you're talking about Roy McDonald?
Oh, you're talking about Gegard.
Oh, yeah, because if you're asking me should Roy go stay at middleweight, the answer is absolutely not. He should never think about being a middleweight ever again. He's just too small. There's some middleweights that are some big boys out there, and it was clear that the size had a major factor. When I was watching this, the funny thing, it made me think about Tyron Woodley, the UFC middle welterweight champion, and he has talked about possibly going to middleweight, and he's a much shorter fighter. He's a lot more explosive, but even then I started thinking about, like, you know what? I don't think Tyron should go up to middleweight, and I definitely think Rory should definitely stay in the welterweight division. Because he's a natural welterweight, and he's one of the top 3 to 4 welterweights in the world, but he's not one of the top 5 middleweights in the world. No way. You agree? Disagree? What you
think? I agree.
Totally. Now, Gegard, man, he really made a claim for being one of the best. I think I would put Gegard up against anyone in the UFC, anyone in Bellator, one championship, and I would not. I would honestly make Gegard either a pick'em fight or favorite against any middleweight in the world. Now, when you look at Rory McDonald and you say, now he goes into the Bellator welterweight Grand Prix, it's kind of a rough situation for him because now he has to go into a Grand Prix, a tournament style fighting tournament where he has to put his title on the line numerous times coming off of a devastating beating. Mentally, he's not coming in this in the strongest situation. Mentally strong, coming off of a loss. This may not be the best situation for him. What's your thoughts?
I think so too. I mean, being able to handle two things at the same time is a little bit difficult. And like you said, when you get defeated in this manner, psychologically, you're not there. You need some time off.
And he won't have that time off because he has that Grand Prix. He has $1 million on the line where the winner gets $1 million. He has his title on the line. I felt like he bit off more than he should have. I understand wanting to reach the dream of being middleweight champion and welterweight champion at the same time because you've seen Conor McGregor and you just saw Daniel Cormier do this and become champ. But then trying to be middleweight champion, welterweight champion, and win the Grand Prix while defending your title, while going for $1 million, I feel like in this particular case, he might have burned the candle at both ends and in the middle, and it may come back to haunt him in this Grand Prix now.
Too much.
Too much. Okay. With that, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk about... What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about HBO saying bye-bye.
And we're also going to talk about that Wanderlei Silva and Rampage Jackson fight. We're also going to cover the Aaron Pico fight and the Douglas Lima fight. Stay tuned, and we will be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back. I'm Tate, the host, and with me once again is Hermelio Garcia. He is our newest member of the GSMC MMA team. We've added, so we have Will, we have Sean, and now we have Hermelio. And we just finished covering the main event for Bellator 203. It's 203 or 206? 206. Whoa. I'm a couple episodes behind here. Anyway, we were just covering that main event where Gegard Mousasi blew through Roy McDonald. We talked about the fight and how the fact that Roy was not prepared to fight at middleweight. I truly thought it was a big mistake and that he should not try to go up in weight again. He is a natural welterweight. And Hermelia, you agreed with me on that one, right?
Yeah, you can see the size difference. So,
now, less
the big one.
Is it really the big one, or is it the fat one, or is it the old one, yeah, or past the out one? Of shape one, yeah, way past our prime one? We are talking about Quentin Rampage Jackson versus Wanderlei Silva. Now, to give you a little background, this is the fourth fight in their, it's not a trilogy anymore. It's
quadrilogy.
Quadrilogy. I like that.
Yeah, there we go.
In their quadrilogy. And this fight, you have two of the biggest heavy hitters in MMA history. Every time these guys have fought, they have been there. They've always ended in a knockout, and this fight was no different. Wanderlei Silva had the edge two fights to one on Rampage, and Rampage evened it up. I'm going to let you start. What did you think about this fight?
Well, first and foremost, I was excited because of the buildup that people were talking about, just the history, the fact that these guys were some of the top dudes when they were in their prime. I mean, I remember Rampage was the guy that came across when I was watching some UFC fights. Like, yes, okay, this guy's a mean dude, big guy. You don't want to mess with him.
And it's funny, you know, when you talk about Rampage being the mean, big dude, it is true. He's always had that persona, yeah, of the big, tough guy. But Rampage, it seems like Rampage is a good 50 pounds over his prime. It just doesn't look right at Rampage as a heavyweight. Light heavyweight was fine. Rampage coming in at 250,
yeah,
I was a little surprised, but I thought it had a factor in this fight, his size.
Yeah, well, I think the commentators were talking about how he came in 30 pounds heavier. I mean, coming from a boxing background where and UFC, I'm assuming, is similar, where there's a reason why we have weight classes. I mean,
That's the beauty. That's the beauty of the heavyweight division.
Yeah,
you, long as you're under that 265, you can make heavyweight.
Right. So it's definitely. I mean, I heard that, and then you can see the size. I mean, both of them, you know, big guts and whatnot. So
and now it's kind of funny. As I not meaning to make fun of this fight at all, because both these guys are great legends. My wife, when we're Rampage was standing there, and there was a picture of Rampage behind him, and he was all cut up, and he had abs. And she was like, that's not the same guy that's fighting tonight, because he did not have any abs. But the fight started out, and I wasn't overly excited about this fight because I knew how far past their prime. But when the fight first started out, it started out slow, and I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be a disaster. It was just like, when a lot of times when you watch fighters who have passed their prime, they're very slow to get off.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, they were circling and they were circling, and nothing was really going on. And I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be a snooze fest. But then toward the end of the first round, they started engaging.
Yeah.
And they were throwing some bombs. When the round ended, Rampage had landed a couple really clean shots. And I mean, you could tell these guys wanted to win this fight. What did you think as the round went on?
Well, with Silva, what I noticed that he was moving. Like you said, they were circling around, but Silva was the one that was moving while Jackson was slowly trying to track him down. But at the end of the round, like you said, with the exchanges, I personally thought that Jackson got the best of those exchanges.
Absolutely. Rolling into the second round, that's when they really started engaging, and it became a very enjoyable fight, where this fight started out to me as, I hate to say this, kind of a joke to me. I became truly interested and truly engaged in the fight. These guys were really throwing some serious leather, and the thing that I noticed was that Rampage wasn't you know, he came in with a game plan to be the bigger guy. He wanted to be the bigger, stronger man, and it worked. I thought he landed, his shots just seemed like they were a lot more heavier than Vandalay. Vandalay did tag him in the second round at one point. But when it was all said and done, because Rampage was such a bigger guy, he was able to handle the shots, eventually walk Vandalay down and catch him and finish him off. When you were looking at this, did you notice how the size made a big difference? And also, the other thing I noticed was that Rampage was trying to be, even though because he knew he was bigger, he was being very efficient with his movement. He wasn't overextending himself so that he didn't tire out. Vandalay, it seemed like he was the one that was starting to get winded. What did you see?
That's exactly what I was thinking, actually, because he was taking his time, and I'm like, okay, maybe he's a slow starter, because Wanderlei was moving. He was jabbing. You know, he was trying to keep distance, but I thought, okay, Jackson maybe a little old, a little tired. Maybe that's why he's not going for it, but exactly, you're totally right. He was being very efficient, and I think it worked well, because in the second round, I mean, you can tell Silva was tired. I mean, they would get towards the cage, you know, press against each other, and he was just looking at the clock. I noticed that.
Yes.
And, you know, so I figured, okay, he's tired. And I just thought Jackson looked fresher.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, Rampage just did not, you know, he really tried to make sure he didn't overextend himself. He didn't stay, you know, he didn't really want to get into too much of a grappling confrontation with him. He didn't really try to do too much dirty boxing against the cage. He wasn't trying to hold him up against the cage that much. He wanted to walk him down and throw hands.
Yeah.
And Vandalay would enter into a few firefights with him, but very early on, you could tell if it's going to go into a firefight, it was Rampage's fight to be had. You know, so what did you think about once Vandalay got caught and Rampage finished him off? Were you okay with everything? What was your thoughts on the closeout of the fight?
I mean, he caught him with a good left, and then, you know, hurt him, And then from then on, just striped him with another right hand, just an overhand right hand, dropped him. And I mean, I was fine with that. He looked hurt. To be honest, part of me was like, maybe they should stop it.
Yes.
Before, you know, I thought the referee should have stopped it a little earlier, but kind of got to give that respect to Silva.
You know, I had a lot of problems with this card in general because I thought there was like two or three fights where I thought the referee allowed things to go on way longer than mm-hmm. normal. And so I was the Lima fight. I thought that rear naked choke, the referee should have jumped in a lot earlier. And then the Aaron Pico fight, I thought the referee let things go on way too long.
That's the one. That's the one that I was thinking about
yes,
right now.
And we're gonna touch on that in a little bit. But so I thought the referees definitely let this fight go on. You know, I was okay with the stoppage, but I understand why you said that mm-hmm. because of the track record that was going on during this fight here. Now, when you look at this and you say, what's next for these two guys? Man, when you look around, they're going to have more fights because they're in Bellator, and Bellator is okay with having the senior circuit. But I really couldn't think of anyone for these guys to fight next. I just totally drew a blank on what's next for these guys, unless they're going to pull out the winner of Chuck and Tito fights the winner of these guys. It just seems like Bellator is just hell-bent on having the senior circuit, and they're going to run these guys out as long as possible. I think both of these guys are clearly past their prime.
Definitely.
So with that, we're going to wrap this segment up. When we come back, we're going to talk about that Aaron Pico fight. We're going to talk about the Lima fight, and then we're going to roll right into talking about the whole situation with HBO getting out of boxing. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
All right, we're back. I'm here with the Aaron Pico of the GSMC podcast, MMA podcast, that is. Hermelio here. He's our newest host. And we've been breaking down that Bellator card, Bellator 206. In the first segment, we talked about Gegard Mousasi going through and handling Roy McDonald and stopping him. Handedly stopping him. Going right into talking about Wanderlei Silva versus Rampage Jackson, in which Rampage got a second round stoppage of Wanderlei Silva. And now we're going to cover a little bit more about some other fights on this card. Now, Hermelio, when you were looking at this card, what other fights on this card did you really, really caught your attention?
For me, the Gaston Bolaños. I was watching that way. They were making a pretty...
Which one was this?
Gaston or Gaston Bolaños versus Isidro Gutierrez.
Okay.
That was another one that I was looking at. I mean, because Gaston being Peruvian, Latino, from the Bay Area, they were making a pretty big deal about him. And so I watched this fight, and good fighter.
He was a good fighter.
Upcoming. Up and coming, though.
And I did not watch this card completely. I watched the main card. But I did not roll into the early prelims. I did get a chance to catch Douglas Lima, mm-hmm. and I did catch the Aaron Pico fight. What was your thoughts on when you saw? First off, you're talking about up and coming stars. What was your thoughts on seeing Aaron Pico for the first time?
Power, for sure. I mean, he has a. You can just tell his hands are very educated. He does have a boxing background. So I thought he was just able to let his hands go really, really well.
Aaron Pico, he's young. You can tell by them calling him the Prodigy, it's the perfect name, because each fight he's getting better and better and better. And he is a well-rounded fighter. When I was watching him fight, the one thing I did notice is he's still green. Mm-hmm. And so there's some areas where I thought got exposed, where, you know, when I watched him, he needs to move his head more, because he got nailed with a few shots.
He comes straight forward, I mean.
Yes, he definitely comes straight ahead. He got caught with a number of leg strikes as well. So this was, in my opinion, for a young prospect like Aaron Pico, someone that's going to be a star later on, it was the perfect fight. And this is the reason why I say it's the perfect fight. If he's my guy, he had his first fight, in which everyone had all this big hype and everything, and he ended up losing. He ended up getting caught and he lost. But since then, he has just annihilated his next two guys he's fought. And this was kind of no difference. But they really had him when he's fighting Leonardo. This was a guy who fought for a Bellator title. This was a definite step up in class. But you had a situation where Aaron Pico looked phenomenal. But when you go back and he looks at this fight, he made some mistakes. He got his bell rung. He got caught with a number of shots. And he was open to the leg kick. So even though he had a successful fight, there's things that they can look at in camp and improve upon. What was your thoughts?
I think so. But also what I appreciated from him, the after post-fight interview, they interviewed him, they talked a little bit, yes, about his performance and whatnot. And they pointed out the fact that, you know, there's some things that he could improve on. But I really liked his response, because he's like, well, that's the point of why we do this. We do it, we learn, then we go back and we improve. And I think that's a good way of seeing, especially from a young fighter.
Yeah, and you know, I was kind of surprised that they put Aaron in a fight with Leonardo. So, a guy who had fought for a title. Bellator has been very cautious when it comes to some of their big stars, such as MVP, like Michael Venom Page. They've been very reluctant to put him in against tougher fighters. This Welterweight Grand Prix is going to be the first time the MVP really gets in the ring with some top-flight fighters, and that's going to be coming soon. But with Aaron Pico, they put him in the ring with a former talent title challenger right out the gate, and he passed with flying colors. I would have given him a grade. I'd give him a B plus, A minus.
I was gonna say B plus.
I'll B, do B plus, yes, because there's definite room to get better. Like I said, movement, head movement, leg kicks. There's more that he could have done to be a better fighter. One of the things that I saw that I was kind of concerned about that will come back to haunt him, I think, is he has supreme confidence. And his supreme confidence allowed him to put a lot of pressure on Leonardo. And not only put pressure on there, but he kind of followed him.
Yeah.
And in boxing or in fighting in general, if you follow a guy, you are setting yourself up to get caught. And that was one of the things I was worried about. Is he going to walk into something? Because he was so over-aggressive that he actually was following. Did you see that?
I saw that. I was telling earlier, he was walking on a straight line. And I thought, okay, he's chasing the guy. But like a guy like Higo, I mean, you can tell he moves well. You know, elusive guy. He knows how to move laterally. If you're not able to cut in this particular case, the octagon, if you're not able to cut that space,
yes,
the ring, as we like to call it in boxing, if you don't cut the ring off, it's very difficult for you to put him in a place where you can land your shots and, you know, not be susceptible to a counter.
And you cannot follow on a straight line. Now, that is a dangerous thing for him to do. See, those are things that, looking at him, there's room for improvement on. Because when you get him in the ring and he's fighting the top echelon, the upper echelon guys, and you make the mistake of following a straight line, being over aggressive, not moving your head, getting kicked, leg kicked, that's a bad recipe. Another fight on this card was Douglas Lima. And Korsakoff, is both of these guys are top flight fighters, former champions. This was an entertaining fight. The one thing about Lima that I love, Lima has these leg kicks that are just vicious. A lot of fighters, they fight behind a jab. A lot of fighters, but Lima uses the leg kicks to set a lot of things up. He was very patient this fight, and eventually he was able to take Korsakoff's back and sink in a nasty, nasty rear naked choke. What was your thoughts on the Douglas Lima fight?
Exactly what you said. I mean, those kicks were just vicious. I remember looking at the fight and those kicks and just thinking, oh, just squirming, because I can only bet how much those hurt.
It takes a lot of stamina out of you. Leg kicks are something that, especially once you take two or three of them, it slows you down. It changes your movement. It takes your power out of you. It takes the starch out of you. And that's what Lima did. He did the same thing when he fought Roy McDonald. Roy McIlroy, which is a tennis player, I mean golfer, Roy McDonald. I can't believe I was doing that the whole card calling him Roy McIlroy. Roy McDonald. Sorry about that, everyone. I'm sure I'll hear about that. But Lima really just, really took it to him. In the end, my big problem was that rear naked choke just on too long?
I thought so. I mean, now you have to give it to Korsakoff. I mean, he'd rather get put to sleep than tap, but I thought so. I mean, the referee was there. You could tell.
He was done. I thought the referee, I was yelling at the screen when I was like, stop this. That was a rough. I mean, I thought it just went on just a few seconds too long.
Well, this one and the Pico.
The Pico fight. I thought the referee with Pico. I thought they were gonna let Pico just pound him in the dust. They would not step in and stop this. And sometimes some referees will let things go on. It's a dangerous situation. I was not happy with the way things went down.
Now, do you think usually refs will do that? In boxing, it happens, but here in this particular case, do you think they do it because, to please the crowd a little bit?
Let
them
see some action? No, that should never, as a referee, that should never come into play. The most important, the referee's job is strictly for one thing, and that is to protect the fighters. There's a reason why MMA is the safest combat sport there is. It's because the referees and the rules are set up to protect the fighters from getting hurt. It is a very dangerous job. That rear naked choke was put in and it was sunk in, with the Douglas Lima fight, that was sunk in deep. And then with Aaron Pico was delivering some nasty, nasty blows. And it's the referee's job to think about the fighter's safety first. I thought they failed on that.
Me too.
All right. So now we're going to change. Speaking of failing, how do you say this? HBO has decided no mas.
No mas.
They are no longer going to be in the boxing business after 45 years. Now, that is the number one reason why I brought you on here. You've been a boxing fan for a very long time. You've been an HBO fan.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of when you saw this?
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I had heard for a while this could be happening, right? I mean, I had noticed in the last 3 years they weren't putting a lot of money into boxing. It seemed like Showtime was the one that was taking over a little bit. And it just sad. When I heard it, I could not believe it, because I recall when I was a kid, I mean, I just remember watching all the Barrera fights, Morales, De La Hoya, some of the early Pacquiao fights.
I was at those fights.
Okay, so I'm jealous now. I'm jealous, but I remember thinking, I didn't even know there were other networks. I always thought, it's HBO. We're going to go watch pay-per-view. It's HBO, always.
You know, it's kind of funny, because when you and I were talking, and I told you this, that I could see that HBO was trying to get out of boxing. they had been cutting back for a while, and we were talking about the fact that I did not think that the third fight of Triple G versus Canelo would end up on HBO or Showtime, that I thought it would end up on ESPN. Do you remember me saying that to you?
Yeah.
Were you surprised, or when you saw that HBO was getting out of the boxing, did you think about that at all?
Well, I just thought, you know, when you said that, I was like, okay, that's a possibility, but I didn't believe it because I thought, well, Canelo is the big cash cow for HBO.
Exactly.
So, you know, he's young, 28 years old, if I'm not mistaken. He still has years to keep fighting and keep bringing in money for the network. So I didn't think they were going to say, you know what, even though we have this guy, we're just going to call it quits.
You know, I've been seeing it. I met Jim Lampley a number of different times, and I've been to so many HBO events, HBO after parties, and I can tell how HBO was really in bed with boxing and how they used that as their way to really launch their network and to make their network the top network. But the climate has changed, and boxing is not getting them getting people to go to HBO, which once upon a time it'd be like, oh no, I have to have HBO because I have to have the boxing. Now it's like, wait a minute, I have to have HBO because Game of Thrones is on.
Exactly.
No one cares that there's Canelo is fighting someone else. If Canelo's fighting a major fighter or Triple G's fighting a major fighter, that's on pay-per-view. But, you know, the regular fights, that's not drawing the people like it used to. The HBO original content is what's drawing everyone. And over the years, whether it's True Blood, Game of Thrones, there's just been so many of these shows that's been blockbusters. I think HBO just realized that, you know what? Maybe it's time to get out.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I was reading an article. They were talking about how when they first got into boxing, you know, in terms of like the subscription was 15% because of boxing. Then nowadays it was 40, but in the last few years, it was only 2%.
Wow. So really it dropped down to 2% of
2%.
People.
So really to them is the ROI, the return on investment for, let's say, a boxing fight is just...
Well, think about that. I mean, if you're saying 40% of the people that used to get HBO was because of boxing, and now it's only 2% of those 2%. People? Only 2%. Yeah. At that point, that's telling you that it's time to get out. Now, do you look at this with HBO getting out of the boxing game? Do you look at this as a good thing, or do you look at this as a bad thing as a boxing fan? I know I have my answer. I'm going to go after you. What's your thoughts?
Like I said, because I'm so used to it, it's sad. But having said, with the changes that are coming, for example, like you have The Zone, ESPN, Showtime, and they're doing subscription-based type of a business model in a sense. I think it's going to be cheaper for customers.
Okay. So you say good thing or bad thing?
I'm just going to say it's a good thing.
Okay. I agree with you 100%. I'm going to tell you that it is a really good thing. Now, I'm a little older than you, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
But I remember as a little boy watching boxing on ABC Sports. And boxing was at its peak. Boxing was the number one sport out there. It was bigger than the NFL at that time. And yes, that makes me, that dates me a little bit there. But, granted, like I said, I was a little boy then. But watching Muhammad Ali and Larry Holmes and Sugar Ray Leonard and Hagler and Hearns and all those guys on ABC and network television, only time you'd ever see really HBO or anything like that was like pay-per-view or what was called closed circuit back then. But once HBO kind of took over, and they really took over once Tyson kind of came in the picture, that's when they really took over boxing. I felt like it hurt boxing because that's when boxing started to go down. Because unless you had the pay-per-view money, you were not seeing the fighters. And because of the fact that the regular networks weren't picking up the smaller fights, there was nowhere to go, like, where people could actually learn about, let's say, XYZ fighter as he's coming up. He's up and coming. So there was no foundation either, like, just trying to think of, one of the fighters that are going around, like Lomachenko. Let's use Lomachenko as a fighter. Great fighter. Do you understand how few people even know who the heck Lomachenko is?
Only the diehards.
You have to be a serious, serious fan of boxing to know who the heck Lomachenko is. So in order to get a big pay-per-view dollars, it has to be an old fighter like Floyd Pacquiao, mm-hmm. or somebody Floyd fought like Canelo, or someone Pacquiao fighter, one of the guys from years ago. You can't get a Lomachenko fight that's going to pull in the dollars that a Mayweather fight is going to bring in.
No way.
And that's because there's no foundation. Now, by taking the fights off of HBO and removing that whole pay-per-view model, where there's going to be a lot more major fights on free television, you can see the next generation of Lomachenkos while they're younger. You'll see them, more people will watch them. So then when you see the next generation of Lomachenko versus the next generation of Triple G, there's excitement behind it, because I know these guys. I've been watching them as they come up. I remember going and see Manny Pacquiao fight on an opening card. This particular card, Mayweather was the main event. But the opening fight was Manny Pacquiao, and nobody knew who Manny was. And I remember watching him, and it's exciting when you see a guy come up from opening to moving up the card to co-main eventing, to by the time he gets to the point where he's main eventing, you're super excited about that guy.
You're invested.
That's what the HBO, in my opinion, the HBO era took away from the fight fan, and I thought it killed boxing. But now, by going away from this, where there are, you know, the HBO, being the ESPNs of the world, the Zones of the world, the Fox Sports, there's going to be either free fights, a lot of streaming fights, mm-hmm. or streaming services that are relatively inexpensive, so that you can go and watch these guys before they become big names, so that you are excited about the bigger fighters. In my opinion, the long story short is, I think this is a good thing for boxing, not a bad thing. Your thoughts?
Agree. And like I was saying earlier, it's going to be more affordable with subscription-based. For example, because I was talking to some friends, and they tell me, well, I don't want to pay, I don't know, $5, $10 a month, every month for ESPN, let's just say, right?
ESPN or Plus.
DAZN. Let's just say DAZN, right? Okay. But I'm like, well, what about if in a year they give you 2 to 3 fights that would be pay-per-view, and you would have to pay, I don't know, $80 per fight?
You know, I will tell you this. The model, the WWE created the model, the perfect model. They just said, you know what, for a small subscription service, you're used to getting let's say SummerSlam and WrestleMania and Hell in the Cell and all these events. And I used to watch wrestling back in the days. But you're used to paying for these events. Now, hey, why don't you just pay a subscription service, a small monthly fee, and you'll get all of these events. Now you have a built-in audience who, if you're paying for ESPN Plus, you're getting some of the boxing fights. You're getting some of the UFC fights. You're getting some college football. You're getting college basketball. You're getting lacrosse. You're getting a lot of things, but you're paying a small subscription, but you're getting all the extra boxing, which is going to allow you to learn who the future fighters are, so that you can get more excited. I just look at it as a win-win for everyone.
I think so. Agree.
Okay. With that, we are going to close out with the closing of HBO, leaving boxing. Once again, thank you for listening. Thank you, Hermelio, for joining in. This is his first episode, so you will be hearing a lot more of him. How'd you think you did on your first time?
A little nervous, but I'll get better.
It gets a little nervous, but listen, you handle it like a pro. You will get a lot better. With that, to all, have a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.